Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. So it's finally Friday again. Not exactly my favorite day of the week, but I know it's something that a lot of you guys are fond of. And there are a million and one places for us to go tonight. I mean, just look at some of the choices. Let's see. Abortion bill approved by South Dakota legislature. Yeah, that's good. I don't mean it's good. I mean, it's good fodder for discussion. Seven soldiers charged with sex crimes in the Army. No one charged yet with war crimes, but seven soldiers charged with sex crimes. Well, you know how it is with Republicans. They're far more interested in the crimes involving sex than they are crimes involving torture and death and murder and mayhem. But, you know, that's me. Only, this is the one that just sort of leaped out at me. Only fully capable Iraqi battalion downgraded requires U.S. assistance. That's the CNN headline. Is it just me, or do I remember various and sundry Pentagon officials getting up and lying through their teeth? Oh, we've got 462 ready divisions, and when they stand up, we'll play what? When they stand up, we'll go hide and seek. When they stand up, we'll play musical chairs. Well, no, it's when they stand up, we'll stand down. That's what it is. The only Iraqi units able to fight without U.S. support have been downgraded to a level that requires them to fight with the backing of U.S. troops, Pentagon officials said today. The single battalion, made up of between 700 and 800 Iraqi army troops, had long been lauded by U.S. commanders as a sign that the Iraqi military is coming along. That's the question, though. Where are they coming along to? But the battalion was downgraded from what the military called level 1 to a lower quality level 2 after a recent quarterly assessment of its capabilities. Officials did not have specifics about why the battalion was downgraded, except that it is under a new command and a number of its combat and support units have changed out, dropped the readiness levels. They were probably never able to fight without U.S. assistance. Who are we trying to kid? And, of course, stories banging around today that the bombing of the Grand Mosque or whatever it is in Samarra, that was an inside job. Several people, and I love the way the journalism puts it, several persons dressed as Iraqi security forces or several persons dressed as Iraqi police. They weren't dressed as Iraqi police. They were Iraqi police. There is nothing there that isn't infiltrated by people who like to blow things up. That's the Iraqi police. That's the Iraqi military. We had the story, what, 2-3 months ago? About the guy in the Kurds in the Iraqi military unit that said, well, you know, I mean, we'll sit here and we'll take orders until it's time for us to bust out and fight for our freedom, and then that's what we're going to do, and we're going to take the guns with us. It astonishes me. That 30%, that 40%, George W. Bush is doing a wonderful job. Boy, I tell you, he's dandy. I mean, it's like the Ernest T. Bass wing of the Republican Party, isn't it? Because I, for the life of me, I can't figure out how you come up with the idea that he's doing a good job. And there's the ports issue. Did you know that, and I'm sure you did, I mean, I'm talking to liberals and progressives, you stay up on things. You don't have to be spoon-fed a bunch of crap by, the O'Reillys and junkies and the Hannity jobs of the world. No woman, not one woman, has ever cast a ballot in the United Arab Emirates. Not once. Never. Not that, as far as I can tell, not that they have a whole lot of elections. It is a tyranny. And I'm not using that in the typical pejorative sense of the word. It is a tyranny in the classic ancient Greek sense of the word. They have a tyrant. Sometimes tyrants are good. Sometimes tyrants are bad. But I mean, you see what I mean? They're not prone to having a lot of elections. And, of course, there a listener sent me some photographs of the United Arab Emirates today. And the former, I think the dude is dead now, but the last guy who ran the joint, his mansion. I mean, there are rooms bigger than my house. Not that I care. But we're not talking here about in Iraq we had the storyline, we're bringing democracy to Iraq, they're going to have free and fair elections and frisbees and wheat checks and unicycles and stuff, and it's all going to be pro-Western, and isn't that lovely? No talk like that about the United Arab Emirates. I'm sorry. It is... Okay, so I guess maybe that was the purpose all along of talking about Saddam and calling him a brutal dictator. Okay, because in the United Arab Emirates, this guy's a dictator. And I'm guessing if you march around in the street saying, down with Sheikh Mohammed, I'm guessing he could be pretty brutal too and you would pretty much die. But these are the people we do business with. If you'd like to see a good compendium of editorial cartoons on the topic, canofun.com, canofun.com has collected several editorial cartoons, and they're good. They're very good. But after this is a sea change. We keep looking at these events and we say, maybe this is the one that changes people's minds. No, maybe this one. Maybe this one. Maybe this one. Maybe this is it. Because after five and a half years of dear leaders saying, we got to be afraid of the terrorists because they hate us because we have asphalt shingled roofs. After 5.5 years of that, a lot of America bit. Now, we had this discussion a couple of weeks back. I don't bite. I live my life. There's a strong chance of me being hit by a car crossing the street or shot by Cheney leaving the hospital. There's lightning, the bad beer, any number of things that could happen. And being done in by some dude that lives in a cave is not high on the list for me. It just isn't. But a lot of people bought in to Dear Leader's terror doctrine that we must all be afraid. And you know what? Now they are. So when he turns around and says, "Well, I want you to meet the new landlords of our ports of New York and Newark and Miami and Philadelphia and Baltimore and New Orleans and Corpus Christi," this is Sheikh Mohammed. We're not going to have any security problems with him. Well, when he does that, having spent 5.5 years trying to terrify the American people, it doesn't play, does it? No, it doesn't. Because the sheeple go, I thought they was the one what bombed us, George. And you know what? For once in their sorry, terrified lives, the sheeple are right. We covered this last night. These are Osama's hunting buddies. These are the guys that we couldn't rocket their tents, the tent city in Afghanistan, because we were afraid we'd wipe out the entire UAE royal family. These are the people who whose banking industry laundered Osama's money. I mean, the list goes on, and they never voted. Women are, no. And dear leader is surprised when people act on his terror initiative? It boggles my mind to ponder it. Oh, and by the way, the phones work. I checked them out, but, you know, that's one more thing on the pre-show list, you know. Big Orange, ICE. Do the phones work? So, what, Agnes? But, yeah, the phones are fired up, they've been checked, and they will be checked every night henceforward. So if you'd like to use them, help yourself. 877-443-2366 is the number. That's 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway... Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Hi, I'm Janice Ian. Do you remember how excited you were at the start of summer every year and how the summer just started to drag on after a few months and you couldn't wait to get back to school, see your old friends, make new friends, get new books and a new locker and a clean slate? Well, you should have been excited about music class, too, because that was a special room where you went to sing, perform with your friends, and learn all kinds of interesting stuff about great composers, instruments, different kinds of music and songs. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped to spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them, and make sure they get involved with music in school and in their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Alrighty, 20 minutes after the hour, well underway for our Friday night edition. And like I said, the phone number is 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. And a little something that I want to pass along your way, just in case you had forgotten You know, it's not just Iraq where we're creating hell and damnation. No. Afghanistan, too. You know, they've got an elected government over there now. A dear leader was proud as punch over it. And didn't the first lady, you know, what's her name, Laura, looks like the love child of the Joker. Didn't she go over there, too? Yeah, she did. Afghan women. Dateline Afghanistan. Afghan women would be forbidden to travel without a male chaperone. Where have I heard this before? Oh, yes, Saudi Arabia. If a male member of the Afghan parliament has his way, Al-Haji Abdul Jabbar Shalgarai called the participation of two women members of parliament in a major donors conference un-Islamic and a violation of the law because they traveled without their husbands, according to the Christian Science Monitor. Shalgarai cited Sharia law, which allows women to travel for more than 3 days only if they are accompanied by a male relative. Boy, I tell you what, we sure did do a humdinger bang-up job of dragging Afghanistan into the 21st century, didn't we? Not quite. Although women's rights, this is the fun part, although women's rights are guaranteed in the Afghan constitution, there is a constitutional provision stating that, quote, no law can be contrary to the beliefs and provisions of the sacred religion of Islam, unquote. Shalgarai invoked the protection of women as the purpose for requiring male chaperones, saying, quote, if someone else's woman is sitting in the same row of seats as you, well, human beings have different drives, including sexual drives. Sometimes these cannot be controlled. That ain't Shalgarai. That's Jerry freaking Falwell. That's Pat Robertson. Oh, my God. If someone's woman... Someone's woman, or, you know, someone's train case, or someone's carry-on luggage, or someone's hound, or someone's neighbor's donkey, or, you see, I mean, do you get what I'm getting at?
You can be beaten for looking a man in the eyes.
I mean, for heaven's... Let's hear that again. I'm not even doing the accent, and it still sounds crazy. If someone else's woman is sitting in the same row of seats as you, well, human beings have different drives, including sexual drives. Didn't we hear this 30 or 40 years ago in the during our own civil rights struggle? You know, one of the reasons we had to keep the blacks separated from the whites is the black men had these overwhelming sexual desires. You know, they were just virile young bucks and, you know, they'd just be on our white women in a minute. Isn't it? No, I mean, isn't that what we were, isn't that, wasn't that? It was. Because human beings have different drives. I mean, you can do Shalgarai here. Oh, what's his name again? Let's do the whole name. Al-Haji Abdul Jabbar Shalgarai. Let's do that with the southern accent and see how it works. Mr. Shalgarai said, if someone else's woman is sitting in the same row of seats as you, well, human beings have different drives, including... sexual drives, sometimes these cannot be controlled. Bigotry is bigotry, and the same goes for prejudice, and the same goes for misogyny. Sexual drives. This guy just said that he, you know, he's part of a nation of rapists. A nation of rapists. And that's the democracy that dear leader is so damn proud of. Just kind of makes you want to get up and sing the national anthem, doesn't it not? Now, you know, they've got these sexual drives, and not everybody can control them. You know, that's why we have to keep the races and the genders separated. Because the next thing you know, they'll be out there in the middle of the street a-rutting on my mail-er. It's straight out of To Kill a Mockingbird. And there he was, a-ruttin' on my mailer. And this is what passes for culture. And this is what passes for the advancement of democracy. But then again, you know, I shouldn't complain. I shouldn't single out the Afghanis. I got no business in the world singling out the Afghanis. No, not when I got stories like South Dakota lawmakers Friday passed a bill banning nearly all abortions in the state, a bill that defines life as beginning at the time of conception, and one that stands in direct conflict with Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that legalized abortions. We're just proud to be the state that's leading this charge. Representative Thomas J. Brunner, a Republican co-sponsor of the bill, told CNN, "The time is right." He said the bill certainly flies in the face of current law, but lawmakers are prepared to battle it all the way to the Supreme Court. The House passed the bill 50-18. And I'm gooning on Afghan men? The people of South Dakota's representatives just said that the women of South Dakota are the property of the men there, too. So, you know, I mean, do we have any doubt that Al-Haji Abdul-Jabbar Shalgari would feel as comfortable in the legislature of South Dakota as he would in the Loya Jirga there in Kandahar and vice versa? Let's see. Mr. Al-Haji Abdul-Jabbar Shalgari, I'd like to introduce you to Representative Thomas J. Brunner, Republican co-sponsor of the bill. You guys are going to get on fabulously. Yes, they will. Funded. I've said it before. I'll continue to say it. If the fundamentalists in the United States ever figure out exactly how much they have in common with the Islamic fundamentalist weirdos in the Middle East, the normal people are screwed. We're just done. Because they're going to shake hands and have a glass of really bad coffee or tea or something, utter a couple of war whoops and come after us. Because when you control a woman's uterus, you control the woman. When you can tell her what she can do with her insides, you can tell her what she can do with the rest of her life. Foot binding, walking 10 or 12 paces behind the man, not traveling for more than 3 days without a chaperone escort. I was wrong. And I will admit when I am wrong. There I was talking about what a failure we are in Afghanistan. And right there before my very eyes is failure of epic proportions in the land of the free and the home of the brave. So I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, one of our regular Friday features now is on the way. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have you know, all of this injustice in society, and why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Better pot it down, Agnes, or I'm going to start rapping. No, that's a cool piece, Mosh by Eminem. It's an exemplar of the power of that particular medium. God, I'm beginning to sound like Leonard Pinth-Garnell. I better shut up. My whiter than Edgar Winterness is beginning to show. Oh, dear God. Well, let's go to the phones before I get myself in any more trouble. It's our weekly feature with our buddy Andy in Wales. Hey, Andy, you're head on.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Going well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Please, Bob, don't rap.
No, I'll not rap. The closest
few white people can do it, and you and me aren't ones of them.
Yeah, okay, we're not. Yeah, the closest to rap I'll ever get is maybe reading a little Dr. Seuss on the air.
Well, we could do with more proper rappers. Do you know what I mean? None of this gangster nonsense.
Right.
About.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there. And it, you know, and it goes. I mean, if you want to get kind of literary and snotty about it, it's no different than the tradition of blind old Homer sitting around the fire, crafting rhymes in Greek. It's the same gig.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know much about rap. I mean, first of all, I'm white, and secondly, I'm in Britain, so we don't get much.
Yeah, you're two strikes down.
Yeah, but you know, I know what's good and I know what's bad, and you know. Eminem and Jurassic 5 and all those sort of people are good. Chuck D, all that sort of stuff is good. All these people that talk about guns and blunts and, whatever.
And whatever's in the trunk and, yeah.
Yeah. And shooting people for fun. That's not, you know, really.
No.
I don't know. But, yeah, we'll leave them to it. Kids like that sort of thing. The ironic part about all that lifestyle and the flashy gear and all that is that who pays for it? Black people in Africa.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And more people need to be told, and a lot of them don't want to, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Gold and diamonds looks good, but hey, sort it, we're not on that anyway.
Well, precisely. I mean, there's so much truth in that. People literally die for the diamonds that go into the bling.
Yeah, isn't a certain reverend involved in something to do with that?
Marion Pat Robertson?
That's one. Take money off the people of America to finance planes that smuggle out diamonds. Nice.
Yeah.
So there you go. You know, that's what you are when you're a demagogue. You're what was it? Somebody, was it you that was saying the Antichrist will come again and has in many forms?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Pat, George, Carl, Dick. Oh, there's loads, aren't there?
No, well, you know, it's a crafty little club there. I mean, all we got to do is get them their little cloven goat hooves and stick a pair of horns on their head, and you know they're pretty much ready for the party.
No, you're right. Same as this crazy fella and all of his type in Afghanistan you were talking about. What was his name? Shalgar.
See, you caught me out. Yeah, Shalgarai.
Shalgarai, right, yeah. Sounds Vulcan off Star Trek.
Kind of, well, I'm thinking Romulan, but yeah.
Yeah, probably, yeah, yeah. Oh, we're showing off about our Trekkiness now, aren't we? Let's stop that.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to point out to that fella, what happens if me or anyone else is stronger than the male relative?
Well, then the woman gets what's coming to her, and then you got a blood feud.
But if you follow the logical conclusion, obviously that isn't what happens, is it, on the whole? Because rape's not exactly common in most countries.
Downright frowned on.
It is here, I believe, but, you know.
Bear in mind in these backward, and a lot of this can't necessarily be, I hope folks understand, Andy, a lot of this can't necessarily be ascribed to Islam. They ascribe it to Islam. It's tribalism.
Yeah, for sure.
There was a girl, a little teenage girl, condemned to death in Iran a couple of weeks ago for stabbing her rapist to death.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there was a girl in Iran who, I believe she was raped and fell pregnant, and her family, you know, didn't want a rapist child, so they smuggled her out of the country to have an abortion, and somebody found out about it, so she was put to death as well.
And this is tribalism.
This is just plain. I mean, there are girls killed over here because they go out with white guys, honor killings. Because the family gets the youngest son who's below he's a junior in the British legal system.
Mm-hmm.
So they get him to do it, so he won't get as long in prison. But you know, it's the father of the family that.
And see, that's not necessarily a function of the religion. That's a function of coming from a culture that is literally the backwater of humanity,
which are very much the same as the hill tribes of Afghanistan and Iran and various other places. I mean, yeah, it's that whole crazy tribal.
Yeah, I will give you my daughter, 6 camels, two donkeys, 13 sheep, and a goat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the young girl is measured in among the livestock.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me sick.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is, you tell me, Andy, am I wrong? I mean, would Brother Shalgarai fit right in with the South Dakota State Legislature?
Oh yeah, for sure. They're a bunch of crazy, crazy racist, fascist, bigoted. Fill in your derogatory terms of people here, but they're all descriptive. These people are just sick. I mean, you know, hey, well, what happens when the population of North South Dakota starts leaving, or wherever it is? I mean, you know, people are going to go, don't want to live here. And do you know who thinks that? The most productive, intelligent people in the state.
Right.
They leave, and so the brain drain continues at a faster pace.
Right, you know, we'll go to civilization.
Well, hey, guys, you know, if you need to move over here, we'll put you up for a bit.
Thanks, Andy. Let's see. What else have I got? Oh, you keep up with music and so forth. Have you seen this story about Morrissey?
No.
You're familiar with Morrissey, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't sit around listening to Morrissey because I do that.
He's
I have to
kind
start
of comic figure in Britain.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and it's so daggum morose, you know, you got to run the warm water and get out the razor blades after a couple of choruses.
Definitely.
He referred to our dear leader as a terrorist, and I guess it was maybe MI5 or MI6, and the FBI came down on him.
Well, what did he say to them? Go yourselves.
The story I've got here, it says he was quizzed by the FBI and Britain's special branch after he called President Bush a terrorist. He said he was baffled to be held and interviewed by the authorities. He was released when they realized the melancholic warbler, sounds like a bird, doesn't it, was not a threat to the free world.
Yeah, like anyone that criticizes George Bush is a threat to the free world.
I'm guessing, you know, I mean, if Morrissey gets shaken down for calling dear leader a terrorist, I got to get a better door, because they're going to be coming through it pretty quick.
You need to get yourself a nice piece of equipment and have it pointed at that door, mate.
Wow.
Because no door in the world will stop them if they want to come through it.
That's
but,
true.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. I mean, you know, the authorities want to come and talk to me. That's fine. Hey, do it, because I'm related to people in the authority, so they'll spring me. You know, I'm not bothered. I'm not going to get extradited. But the whole situation where people in Britain can be extradited by some agent somewhere saying, we want him. It used to be, we want him, and the British court would go, evidence? And you'd go, oh, okay, if we have to. But
yeah.
Now it's, we want him.
Right. It's, yeah, we want him, and yeah, once upon a time it was, and why?
Yeah, I mean, now, though, if we want one of yours, why?
Right.
It's not a mutual extradition thing.
No. I mean, the guy that was wanted for murder in Massachusetts, you know, he just waived extradition as soon as he realized that there was not going to be any real struggle over letting him go. And the thing is, I thought there were laws, Andy, in most of the EU that said you guys don't extradite to countries that do the death penalty thing.
Well, technically, Britain isn't allowed to extradite anyone under the European Charter because it's covered. But they still do, and nobody in Europe wants to challenge Britain, since Britain's actually paying quite a lot into Europe. I think we're like the second highest contributor at the moment, after Germany. And obviously Germany's economy is huge compared to ours.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we shouldn't be allowed to be extradited, especially to America, where it practices torture and the death penalty. So I'm sure there's a human rights case in there for somebody, and if it should come to court, which it will do at some point. I mean, we've got an organization called Liberty over here who are pretty good. I mean, you know, they'll defend anyone, same as the ACLU, I guess. But, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be the craziest terrorist on the planet and they'll still stand up for you, you know. But, you know, until they call the court case, until the High Court decides that European law stands, which the High Court normally ends up deciding, until then, people get shipped off. No real questions asked, you know.
Yeah. It's pathetic. It's pathetic all the way around. Has the story over here, I wanted to see if anything more was shaken out of it over your way, Andy. The story about the British soldiers beating the stuffings out of the unarmed, defenseless Iraqis, I guess, what, down near Basra?
We saw the whole video. I mean, it's about 4.5 minutes long.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, it was one of those situations where the man in charge should have gone, stop that. And the soldiers shouldn't have done it. But it wasn't like they went out and just grabbed some people. I mean, they'd just been under mortar fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bunch of dudes were throwing, like, rocks and Molotov cocktails at them. So they went charging off after them with shields and batons and dragged a few back. And then, yeah, they gave them a kicking, which they just shouldn't have done. They should have just been questioned and then released. So, yeah, bad behavior all round is just unacceptable. And the guys who are responsible will be charged, because we don't mess about. Our military police are pretty harsh. They'll get prison sentences, you know, sort of 5 to 10 years or something, depending on how badly they hurt people.
But it didn't just slide right off the radar screen, because that's exactly what happened to it over here.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about those things over here is they will kind of slide away, because within a month or two, it'll be back on the news with a court case. You know, we'll see them coming out of court we won't see them coming out of court, we'll see them going into court, and then we'll hear the soldiers have been put in prison. Because, I mean, we've already had about, I think, 7 or 8 convictions just for individual cases of soldiers' brutality or you know, negligence, whereas you guys put away, what, 5 or 6 people?
Yeah, over the entire Abu Ghraib thing, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, what happened there was just horrendous. I mean, you know, you can't really compare the two, but you can. They're in the same gate. They're in the same, I don't know, they're in the same game, but they're in two totally different divisions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, we've ratcheted it up. We've gone pro.
Yeah.
What gives with the mayor of London, Andy?
Oh, that's Tony Blair exerting his power, just obviously. Do you know what happened?
Well, my understanding is Ken Livingstone, mayor of London, is he still the Lord Mayor, or is he just the mayor?
Well, technically, I guess he'd be the Lord Mayor, but he's too socialist to call himself Lord Mayor.
Okay, so he goes to a cocktail party. He goes to a cocktail party of some sort. And he's, you know, got his coat on, and he's coming out of the cocktail party and gets, what, a microphone shoved in his face by some reporter for the Evening Standard?
Yeah, the Evening Standard, just to set the sort of scene for everybody, is a sister paper to the Daily Mail, which is about as right-wing as you can get. I mean, in the 30s, they were openly pro-Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hurrah the black shirts, I think, was their particularly famous phrase, headline thing, you know. So, yeah,
that's inspiring.
It's one of those papers, you know, you don't talk to them unless you absolutely have to, I'd guess. And Mr. Livingstone came out, and the guy shoved a microphone and asked him some stupid question. And Ken Livingstone basically said, like, you're acting like a concentration camp guard. And the guy went, oh, I'm Jewish, I find that offensive. And Ken Livingston's assistant is stood next to him. She happens to be Jewish. She wasn't offended, because what he said during this altercation was, you're just doing your job, aren't you? You're just doing what you're paid to do. But what you're paid to do is fascist.
Right, there was a follow-up to the exchange. He said, you're acting like a concentration camp guard. The guy said, I'm offended, I'm Jewish. He said, oh, then you're like, you're doing it for pay, or, you know, basically.
Yeah, exactly what the guards did in those concentration camps.
Right.
They followed orders and did it for the money.
And now he's been,
suspended. Off him, and there's no way Ken Livingston's ever going to apologize to any of those papers. You know, it's like that. You can have my guns when you pull them from my cold, dead fingers sort
sure.
of situation. So, yeah, he said, like, yourselves, as Dick does.
Mm-hmm.
And then some unelected bunch of officials appointed by Tony Blair's government decided that he was suspended for 4 months. I mean, what is he? Is he a school child? He's the mayor of London. Now, what happens if something blows up in London during the next 4 weeks? Who's in charge?
Well, he's off the hook.
Yeah, because he's going to be at home.
Or, well, no, maybe it's his fault because of his intemperate remarks.
But, you know, it's just another...
Well, interestingly, though, I mean, my reading on the subject, Andy, indicates that the group that complained against him, and it was, you know, it was similar to what we have over here, the Anti-Defamation League. But they said we didn't want him suspended.
No, they just wanted an apology, and if he wasn't going to give an apology, they wanted him told off, I guess. But, yeah, I think everybody's been surprised by this. I mean, these three people that unelected him for 4 weeks, I mean, first of all, we don't even know if they're London voters, yeah? Secondly, they're officials paid by the government to make decisions for the government. And, you know, it's just undemocratic, isn't it? But then that's the hallmark of Tony Blair and the neoconservative movement all around the world, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the quashing of free speech and the disenfranchisement. That's a great point, Andy, because, yeah, for 4 months' time, the voters of London have been disenfranchised.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 8 million people or so voted in the election. He got an overwhelmingly large landslide victory again. So, you know, the people of London want him. More than 8 million people live there, but not all of them vote. So, you know, there's a good 6 or 7 million people thinking, well, my mayor's just been... fired, suspended.
Yeah, it's not quite.
He's not quite sacked. Mile of the building.
Say what?
I mean, he's not allowed within a mile of the building or something. It's like, you know, prohibitory order, like he's a sex offender or something.
Oh, jeez.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. But, you know, then there's the plan over here to...
Well, at least they didn't stick him in the tower.
Yeah, right, yeah. That's coming up next for some of us, I think. I mean, have you heard that there's a plan for a new unified police force of the United Kingdom?
No.
Well, they want a state police, and you know what happens when you have a state police? You have a police state.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, that's why we're all nervous about the Secret Service uniform division that's contained in the Patriot reauthorization.
Oh, yeah, that's a scary business. I mean... That is the brown shirts, isn't it?
Yeah, black.
Well,
I mean, these guys have a taste for black.
Yeah, that's true. Probably with little lightning emblems somewhere around the collar.
Well, it is the Secret Service.
Yeah, a little silver SS.
Yeah, you know, and it's not like they're it's not like they're taking it from the Germans. They're copying it from Kiss.
Yeah.
The band, yeah, you know. Right.
Well, it's just ridiculous. The whole concept of why we're having a unified police force, state, regime, whatever, is because it'll help us in our fight against terror. But Bob, we've been fighting terror since, the Middle Ages? Probably before that.
Well, on the home front, at least since the Crown created Ulster.
Well, yeah, I mean...
I mean, I don't mean to open up that can of worms, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, just in my lifetime, the overriding terrorist threat has been Northern Ireland. I mean, I've grown up throughout my whole life knowing that people that, you know... I mean, I've had a lot of my dad's friends worked in London. They're quite high up in the government, so they were targets, you know, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I was brought up in the knowledge that we might well have to go to funerals because of those Irish people that were blowing people up. And, yeah, it was a complicated situation, and no, nobody should really be blamed. And yeah, we need to sort it out, and we've finally managed to start doing that. We've finally turned the IRA into just a criminal enterprise.
Right.
You know what I mean? Most of the IRA have given it up. And the ones that don't want to give it up are the hardcore criminal types.
Well, they're, yeah, the ones that don't want to give it up or don't want to give it up because they've been having too much fun doing it.
Oh, yeah. The,
I mean, they enjoy the murder. They enjoy the mayhem. After, mm-hmm. You know, I've heard it said that after a while, a cannibal develops a taste for people.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And it's,
well,
it's,
that's the score, isn't it? I mean, they're...
But I mean, yeah, it amazes me that somebody like Tony Blair or, you know, George Bush over here saying that, you know, the oceans no longer protect us after 9/11. Well, you know, and we've talked about this before. The British forces came up the Chesapeake Bay and darn near burned the Capitol and the White House to the ground.
Yeah.
The oceans weren't much good in 1814 either.
Well, the oceans weren't much good in 1941 either.
Well, no.
I mean, oceans aren't much good, except for sailing ships on and for marine creatures to live in.
I mean, are we to understand over here, Andy, we in the United States, are we to understand that your typical Englishman is more terrified of the random act of violence perpetrated by an aggrieved Middle Easterner, that they're more terrified of that than nightly barrages of little V1s?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The whole, we're all scared of terrorism, so we must surrender our rights, that we're getting fed in the press. I mean, the BBC's even guilty of it to a degree, but at least they're kind of easing off on that a bit now.
So I mean, are there enough senior citizens left in the United Kingdom, Andy, to sit up and say, you know, I remember the Blitz?
Yeah, well, no, we have got quite a lot, actually. We've still got plenty of living, the war survivors and stuff. And yeah, we need those people, because those people, like you were saying the other night, they're the ones that can tell us what to do.
Yeah.
We'll provide the muscle. They provide the know-how.
Yeah, and the leadership and just a little common sense.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think probably, you know, just by sheer demographics, our World War II survivors and veterans are a little bit more scattered. We ourselves as a nation here in the U.S. are more scattered. Like I said,
well,
the other night,
it's have less people involved in the Second World War than we did anyway.
Well, that's
so.
Yeah, the entire island.
Well, pretty much. There was only about sort of a few hundred square miles that was out of range of German bombers, which is kind of a bit of North Wales and a bit of northwest England.
Right, and so. You know, you've got the living monument. I mean, and frankly, when you elect in a straight up war, in a plain old fashioned declared war, when you elect to start bombing civilian targets, and I'm not saying it goes only in one direction because, you know, Dresden stands in stark relief we were more than capable of doing evil in the opposite direction. But when you attack civilian populations sheerly for, what was the German word for it? I think it was, Schrecklichkeit? Something like that. You know, when you decide to attack civilian populations, that's the ultimate definition of terrorism.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you have a concentrated population there of elderly folks, but folks who are still in control of their faculties and can speak to the younger generations of the UK and say, you know, we went through this, it's okay, you know. With Stuka dive bombers and BF-110s and you know, the Dorniers and the Hankels overhead constantly, and we went about our business, we went marketing, we went grocering. You don't have to turn into a police state to fight this stuff.
Well, the entirely weirdest thing about the current situation is there is none of that. There's nothing happening.
No.
How many Americans have sacrificed, discount the military families, which are a tiny percentage of your population, not even a percent probably, how many Americans have sacrificed anything for this war?
We are down roughly, 5,700 people.
5,700.
Since September the 11th.
Yeah.
And I'm not discounting a single one of them.
Come on, man. Not the casualties they give us. The ones that die in Ramstein or on the flight out of Iraq or anywhere that's outside of Iraq's borders. Let's call it 5,000 dead soldiers.
Okay, yeah,
another 25,000 wounded soldiers. And another 3,000 dead people in the World Trade Center.
Right.
So, yeah, we've got like, what, total 8,000 people dead since the World Trade Center, which I'm not entirely convinced was done by Arabs anyway, are we? But how many families does that translate into? Well, it's that many families, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
who else has sacrificed anything? Are you buying bonds?
Nope, sorry, no bonds. No stamps.
You have steel for bullets?
Nope. Not rolling any bandages.
What about digging for victory?
Nope, sorry, no gardens.
Oh, you're still importing all your food, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
You see, the whole situation is just so false.
Andy, we got told to go shopping on September the 13th.
I know, I know. But what do you expect from that? Just total...
Pinhead.
I can't say the word I want to say, you know.
Yeah. I know. But it's such a, you know, and like I talk a lot about my dad, and you know he was in graduated high school in 1943 when he was working an after school job so he could buy stamp, you know, you bought the little stamps and you filled the stamp book and that bought a bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but we don't have to have war bonds. We'll just do it. You know, we'll just write another check to China.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole isolationist thing, I guess, is the problem for you guys. Because, I mean, you know, my father's father, I never knew. He died when my dad was 16 because he contracted pneumonia and bronchitis from sitting on an anti-aircraft gun all night, every night in Scotland, on the east coast of Scotland, winter, summer, spring or autumn. And, yeah, he died from the war, not directly, but, you know, lots of people died later on from their wounds and from the illnesses they pick up.
Right.
So I've been directly affected by this sort of wholesale slaughter that Clash of Civilizations is. And, you know, I didn't know one of my grandfathers because of it. My other grandfather was a preacher in the war, so he went overseas with a Bible instead of a gun. And, you know, had bullets and bombs thrown at him and stuff, and he came back and told me all the horrible things that war is, you know, and... Those bits in the movies where you see the bits coming out of people and the brains exploding over his mate, and that happens. That's real. They're not messing about in those special effects departments.
No.
So why anybody in America could just go, oh, yeah, let's blow up them Arabs, or, you know, they deserve it because they're filling your denomination here. I can only explain it by isolationism. I can only explain it by kind of we're the humans.
Well, Andy, don't sell out bigotry. Don't sell out prejudice. But that's a sub-function of the isolationism thing, again.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just that whole sort of we're number one and nobody else can defeat us. America's never actually been number one.
Hegemony viewed as a football game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the way we used to play it, and look what that got us.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the way the Romans played it. It was a football game for control of Rome, the whole Roman Empire, everything that happened in the Roman Empire, all of that history. It was just a game to control Rome.
Yeah.
And the same game's being played out, but it's not Rome.
Well, you know, even closer to the present in history, for what, 150 years, the interplay between the Russians, the British Empire... well, it was the Russians and the British Empire over Iran and Afghanistan was referred to as the Great Game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the whole Crimean War and the whole sort of age of empires, as it were, during the 17th and 18th centuries and so forth, that was all, yeah, the game, wasn't it? It was just played with the pawns who happened to be little people living in towns and villages dotted around the world. And it's being played again now by these people, and it's
and in either
problem.
Instance, what's one peasant more or less?
Well, that's the way they see it.
Unless you happen to be the peasant.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody who cares.
We're out of time, Andy, but I sure do enjoy these phone conversations. I look forward to next week.
Wicked, man. I'll speak to you soon. Love to Agnes.
All right, will do. Take care.
Cool, man. Goodbye.
Bye now. Our pal Andy in South Wales. Perspective. It is all perspective. And what this is Head On. Your phone calls, of course, are welcome. It's Friday night. Let's get it all out of our system. 2 days of silence otherwise. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob.
I'm 15 for a moment, caught in between 10 and 20, and I'm just dreaming, counting the ways to where you are. I'm 22 for a moment, and she feels better than ever, and we're on fire, making our way back from Mars. 15, there's still time for you, time to buy and time to lose. 15, there's never a wish better than this, when you only got 100 years to live.
Welcome.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Well, I got a pocket reputation, cause I like to get low down. All you mothers better lock up your daughters, cause the boogeyman's in town. They call me the boogeyman. Nobody can do it like I can. Well, they call me the boogeyman. I'm a king-size boogeyman. Sheriff's got my number. He locked me up last fall. I taught his daughter how to do the boogie. Now can't go back at all. They call me the boogeyman. Nobody can do it like I can. So they call me the boogeyman. I'm a king-size boogeyman. Well, I used to play in a traveling band down on the county line. Down there to do some boogieing, and I wound up doing time. They call me the boogeyman. Nobody can do it like I can. So they call me the boogeyman. I'm a king size boogeyman. King size. Time and women, and you never talks on the ball. Just a little taste of my good boogie will make you climb this wall. They call me the boogeyman. Nobody can do it like I can. So they call me the boogeyman. I'm a king-size boogeyman. Well, I got a pocket reputation, cause I like to get low down. Mothers better lock up your daughters, cause the boogeyman's in town. They call me the boogeyman. Nobody can do it like I can. So they call me the boogeyman. I'm a king-size boogeyman. King-size, my boogeyman.
You were her, just like the river distilled.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6.5 minutes after the hour. Only a little less than two hours left in this Friday night program. The phone number, 877-443-2366. I'm gonna put that number out there until it's sort of, you know, it's like little, you know, the little wood burning tool in my brain. You know, I say the phone number in my sleep now. When we all do, I'll be happy. Let's do go to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. How you doing?
I'm still breathing.
Hey, I'm glad.
Why?
Because we prefer you above the ground as opposed to below it, Bob. You know, every day above the dirt. It's a good one.
Been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, this will be the last call.
Why is that?
Well, kind of like when you go outdoors, it cheers. The last call, okay? Rick said last night that you got guys calling that are just on the line like Jim and Bob.
No. He wasn't insulting anybody.
I know he wasn't.
He was talking about how refreshing it is to hear the regulars.
I want the others more than you do. I want to hear from those listeners, those ones that nobody hears from because they're afraid to get on the line, because maybe their voice frightens them when it comes back at them. Because I've listened to mine, and I don't like it when I hear it.
Nobody does, Bob.
I know.
I'm not talking about you. I mean anybody. The first time you hear your recorded voice, you just want to sit in a corner and cry for a while.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, see, so,
I'm on Rick's side. You got Bob. You got Jim. You got David. You got people coming at you. They got strong voices, right?
Well, that's what we're trying to build here, Bob. And I think we're succeeding.
I know you are. I know you are. And I got a package coming to you.
Oh, really?
Yes, I do. I'm working. I got the last piece of my project together. I'm going to send it to you. And if you don't understand that Mike Malloy is right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Malloy on Air America. He has researched his piece of the project,
mm-hmm.
and it's time that the rest of us kind of just open our eyes and take a look at it and say,
Well, if you're talking about 9/11, Bob, and I assume you are.
No,
oh, you're
I'm
not?
Talking about what's happening in this country. No, it ain't 9/11.
Okay.
It's today, okay?
Yeah.
Day. Hey, if you're... Oh, what was that Ronnie said back in the 1980s? If you're better off today.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Than you were 4 years ago, okay?
Right. I remember that very well.
Yeah, of course you do. And everybody remembers that. The great communicator, the brain-dead monkey... controlled by other brain-dead monkeys.
Well, you know, I saw a great poster. You were talking about Malloy over at BartCop.com today, Bob.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy movie is done, and you can watch the Mike Malloy interview movie through a link at BartCop.
I've seen it.
But there is a sign there, and I laughed out loud, Bob, because it showed a picture of Ronald Reagan in his cowboy hat next to a picture of Dear Leader in his cowboy hat. And under Ronald Reagan, it said Ron, and under Dear Leader, it said Moron. And it was just perfect. I laughed out loud.
Dear? No. Der-ber-er.
Yeah, Der Fuhrer.
No, Der Fuhrer. Der Fuhrer.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
The leader, the one that's going to take us to prosperity. Okay? The one that's going to take us into Poland and take us into where? Into Russia? No.
Yeah.
Come on.
Get off the damn pot. Okay? I know what you're talking about.
Get off the pot and listen. We are going not forward. We're not... Oh, excuse me. I was going to give you my last call, and this will be my last call.
I hope not.
No, not... Well, maybe the last call this year. Okay, I'll give you a 6 months or 10 years. I don't care. Bob, I'm not important. I am not important. I'm up here in North Dakota. I'm not in South Dakota where they have done this travesty against justice.
Yeah.
I'm not there.
Well, you know, and that's something to be proud of, frankly.
No.
I mean, are there any decent democratically minded people there in South Dakota, Bob? You're not responsible for them. You don't have to answer for them. But if you can offer us some insight, I'd sure appreciate it.
South Dakota. Oh my God.
I mean, yes, my God, that's the state that gave
yes,
us
there
gave.
Are. There are democratically minded people, but the thing is, they're like, okay. Chaff in the wind.
Yeah.
Chaff in the wind. Or dust in the wind, dude. Yeah. I love the dust in the wind, dude one.
Yeah.
Because we're all dust in the wind. We're going into the grave, but how are we going into that grave? Are we going in boldly and saying, you know,
yeah,
at that last moment, you know, I rage against this darkness, or am I one of the recipients of the Texas gang, the Texas Chainsaw Gang? It's got a Texas Chainsaw Murderers, the Texas Chainsaw Gang that's going to inject our veins with some poison that's going to put us to sleep before they creep out of the building and get on their P-rolls and get out of the devastation of Katrina. Not, what was it, Karina? What the hell did that? I'm going to say a bad word, Bob. So, hey, Agnes, if you're listening, just hit the red button, because that ignorant, that filthy, that scum that sits beside the monkey in the White House, that female that calls herself a woman, is not. And believe me when I say this, the Stepford wife, yes, she is that, but she killed her own beau.
Yeah, she wiped out her boyfriend back in the early 60s, no doubt about that.
Her own beau, Bob.
Yeah, after an ugly little argument, no less.
It's like, no, it is not an ugly little argument.
They had a falling out.
Huh?
They had had a falling out, and she very shortly thereafter killed him.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. But that's how she found herself a part of this filth. This scum, Bob, like I said, I pray to God, I pray to my God, not yours, I pray to my God that the NSA, the CIA, the BFIA, or what is that, BF, what was that thing, this is the BFGIA or something like that, is watching me. I want them to come here because there will be a... Okay, I'm not supposed to say the word. I'm not supposed to say it.
There will be
a BLOAD letting. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
That Christ would be proud of. I'm going to take down more
Bob.
Than I have spawned on this planet. I'm going to take down a whole lot more of them, Bob.
Well, then you've got to be ready, and you can't. No, I mean, you know better than I that you cannot pick the time.
No, there's no time.
But the
Bob.
Fact, but I want to sort of redirect you for just a minute, Bob.
Okay.
We were talking about South Dakota and what has happened there. You know, if South Dakota has outlawed abortion, and they have. How long is it going to take before North Dakota does?
North Dakota. Oh, my God. This part of the country is like, hey, it's like, you remember the 1950s, but you got to go just a little bit.
But, I mean, they haven't done it yet, have they?
No. You got to step back from it. Because... When I came...
Now, you're the one that tells me not to look into the past, Bob.
No, I want to take you back to the past, to the 1930s, okay?
All right.
I want to take you back to the... Oh, what was that? Oh, gosh, I heard it the other night. The KKK, Ku Klux Klan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? We're talking about some real prejudiced people, okay?
Yeah.
And this part of the state, this part of the nation, okay, was a very big piece of what was his name? I guess it was some people call him Mark Twain, and some other people called him what?
Sam Clemens,
and he said something. He wrote some more important things after he wrote. What was that Becky and
yeah, Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. And, yeah, there's a lot more others.
Yeah, the wonderful things they remember him about. But they don't remember his final writings, do they?
No, they don't remember the war prayer.
No, they don't remember.
They don't remember the
anything.
Damned human race. They don't remember...
Why?
Why,
Bob?
Well, because it was offensive. I mean, his own publisher told Clemens that he could not publish those things in his lifetime. And you know what? He didn't.
I know he didn't. I know he didn't.
Yeah, the last stuff that Mark Twain published, whether it's The Mysterious Stranger or The Man Who Corrupted Hadleyburg, all that funny stuff was by the boards. By the end of his life, Sam Clemens was a man deeply aggrieved with the human race.
And why are Americans deeply aggrieved with the human race? All Americans, every one of us, Bob. You know, you say, like I said, it's kind of like the last call. I'm not saying I'll never call you again. I'm just saying.
Well, I hope not.
No, it's not like I will never call you again. It's just like this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have used up a lot of your time, but there are so many Americans that need to get engaged. I mean, they need to get engaged. And like I said, it's either you get in the fight or you just, hey, just cower back and... Be a good Nazi, okay? Either you get in the damn fight and fight the Nazis, or you are a Nazi. Period. That's it. There ain't no difference. Either you get in the fight and you start right now, today. You don't put up with Kent. I got a letter from that SOB, and I won't say, like Mike Malloy says this. Son of a bee. I won't say it on your program because I know what's going on over the airwaves. But I got a letter from Kent Conrad, and I got a message I want spread around the world. I want him back because I met that boy when he first ran for that office. and I want him back. I want him back in my face like he was then, begging for my vote and begging for me to back him, okay?
Yeah.
I want that boy. I want Kent Conrad.
Yeah, not the sordid. Yeah, not the and it's something. Look,
no, you're United States.
No, you're putting. Yeah, right. You're putting your finger on something here, Bob. And that is something happens to them after a little while. You know, I don't know if it's in the D.C. water supply or if it's just the constant flood of money over them or the fact that it's a far cry from inside the Beltway to the rolling fields of North Dakota, isn't it?
I want his body in front of me. And then you will have no more Kent Conrad. No. Do not challenge me, son. Because I'm not threatening his life.
Okay, that's fine, as long as we're clear on that.
Office. I'm
good.
Telling him that if he stands before me, I will belittle him before his people to where they will not vote for him again.
Right.
I'm not asking you to think that I'm going to take his filthy life. His filthy life. He will be like that thing that crawls.
With a lot of these so-called Democrats, you know what you're talking about is assailing his dignity, and I don't know if they've got any dignity left.
They have no courage. Hey, when his wife was accosted in front of his house, he cowered. He cowered in Washington while his wife was being accosted in front of his house, and he cowered behind the door while his wife was accosted, and she said, "Oh, I was accosted by a black man." No. That's a lie, too. And they lie, son. They lie. That's all they can do. The Democrats lie. The Republicans lie. They live a lie. They do not live the truth. They are not strong men. They're cowards. And that's why I ask this Kent Conrad and Byron Dorgan. I know.
Bob, I think you're touching on something here that a lot of us can identify with, and that is we're not inspired. There's no inspiring leadership. I mean, and frankly, let's talk about the Republicans for a minute. Do you think that there are actually Republicans wandering around out there that say, "Boy, that Bill Frist, he sure is a leader"? No, the Republicans don't have any leaders. The Democrats don't have any leaders. You mentioned the chaff earlier. This is the winnowing of the wheat from the chaff, and there is no leadership in America anymore. Frankly, the last real leader that Democrats had in the Senate got killed in a plane crash a few years back. I still grieve every time I think about Paul Wellstone.
I was going to say Paul Wellstone, but you beat me to the punch.
You know,
but
I,
no, hey,
no, I mean, look, I got.
Hey, he started out as a wrestler, okay?
Yeah.
He wrestled with other.
And he also started out as an ordinary, you know, human being from rising up from the middle class.
Yes.
You know, the reason that we in West Virginia, Bob, the reason that we adore Robert Byrd so much is that guy came up from where so many other people came up from. You know, he worked his way up. He was a butcher in a coal company in a grocery store. During the Second World War, he was a welder in the shipyards in Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was the
where
real deal.
Did
he got
that he, Robert Bird go.
I don't know. I don't know.
No.
You know, this guy graduated summa cum laude or some such. He's an autodidact. He saw to his own education. I mean, this was real Abraham Lincoln stuff. I mean, this was the studying by the candlelight thing.
Mm.
And he was admirable, and he was loved. And now in his, what, 87th, 88th year, he sells out not just the people of West Virginia, but he sells out the people of the United States of America with his vote on Alito. And now I'm getting emails in my box from him talking about how he wants to, you know, he wants to challenge the president's illegal spying, and he wants to challenge the president's sale of our ports to the United
wow.
Arab Emirates. And he, you know, he can frankly go bark up a rope for all I care, because he put a guy on the Supreme Court who is going to invalidate everything he's talking about fighting for.
Absolutely. And this man,
I'm not playing it anymore, Bob. I've seen that movie.
I know that. I've seen that movie too, but it ain't a movie. This is reality, and you either get in a fight or you don't. And if you ain't going to get in a fight, get the hell out of the goddamn way. And, oh, excuse me. I said,
that's all right.
I said, get out of the way and let those of us that really want to fight, and I'm asking them to come. I'm begging them. I seriously pray to God that they'll come to my door before the day I lay my body down, which won't be long from now, because they've poured enough that stuff in me to where I take several pills a day. I mean,
yeah.
I'm talking about handfuls in the morning, handfuls in the afternoon, handfuls in the evening just to keep breathing. But I'm breathing for one reason, because I want a fight. I want some fight out of this nation before it just lays down and becomes something else. And I don't give a hoot in hell about who runs the port. I'm thinking about the SOBs that try to run their ships into our ports.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about, where are they coming from? Are they our friends? No, they're not our friends. They're not our friends. They're not our friends in Washington. They're not our friends in West Virginia. They're not our friends down there in Panama. Was that Panama City?
Panama City, Florida.
Panama City, Florida. I would like to give a scream out.
Yeah, go right ahead.
To Rick. Okay?
Yeah.
Bring it on, son. Okay? Bob is still screaming for a moment, just one moment on this planet. But I'm screaming out this to you. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to every American. It doesn't matter. No, hey. If you're poor, if you're rich, if you're in between, like the middle class, the ones with their yellow stickers on the back of their bumpers that says support George Bush, don't tell me it's support the troops. Don't ever tell me that, because I've heard from my troops. I live it. I love it. I'm part of it. And I know what supporting the troops is. It ain't got nothing to do with your SUV with its yellow sticker that says support George Bush on it. It's right here. Bring them home, and bring them home now, and don't give me any of your rap about, oh goodness gracious, we have to fight the terrorists, because the terrorist is head one, George Bush, Washington, D.C., president. No.
Yeah, I understand. Bob, we got to roll out of here.
Okay.
Honey, I
got
to get the break.
All right, take care, Bob.
Good night.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we will be back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out.
Right. 24 minutes before the hour. We are halfway through this Friday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And the phone number, do you know the phone number? 877-443-2366. There was kind of a gauntlet thrown down there by our friend Bob in North Dakota. And last night by Rick in Panama City, Florida. We will begin to make a difference. And I'm not talking about this show. I'm talking about every liberal talk show out there. Whether it's me, whether it's the Young Turks, whether it's Sam Cedar, Mike Malloy, Randy Rhodes. it is the constant interplay of new callers. Because for something on the order of 20 years, it was nothing but the right-wing megaphone. And people fundamentally want to believe that they're on the right side of something. And you know what our side did? Our side said, ooh, AM radio, ooh, we don't want to do that. AM radio's on the way out. Ain't you heard that FM quadraphonic yet? And our side did the same thing that our side did in the 2004 election. Our side quit the field. Our side gave up on an entire segment of the population and let. Yeah, this conservative garbage didn't happen overnight. It happened because we let it happen. Bruce is with us. We're having a Skype experiment tonight. Hey, Bruce, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Can you hear everything okay?
I'm hearing everything wonderfully.
Great.
I love Bob in North Dakota, and I'm going to tell you why I love Bob, because Bob represents all that is right, I believe, with America, and when I say that, what I mean is that, you know, it's going to take stepping out, it's going to take creating a new conversation, it's going to take people putting their feet on the street and showing those in power that we're no longer going to take being handed crumbs any longer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it amazes me how people just go through their lives and they just don't see it, you know. But I'm heartened because I'm seeing people wake up. I had a conversation today with a guy who is a retired bank executive who I would have thought would have bet $1 million that he was one of the right.
Mm-hmm.
And through the course of this conversation, he mentioned that he had run into my radio show.
Yeah, All Things Reconsidered, Sunday nights at 10 Eastern Time.
Shameless plug. Thank
you. Am I good or what?
But, you know, and I was talking to him, and he was like, he said to me, you know, he goes, well, he's president now, and there's not a whole lot we can do about that. He goes, but the direction he's taken this country is really a shameful, shameful, shameful direction. And I just stood there with my jaw, you know, I was picking my jaw up off the floor and going, oh, my gosh. You know, the earthlings are waking up.
Well, maybe we've shoved a few of the pod people out from under the beds. The thing that worries me is that, I'm so glad that guy you talked to is talking that way. The question is, you know, can he take the next step? You know, anybody who's ever been involved, like with a 12-step program, knows that, you know, the step one is a start, but it's not a finish.
Yeah.
You know,
you gotta
take step number two and three and four and whatever. And step number one is this guy is poison. Step number two is everything this guy thinks he believes in, that Bush, is poison. Step number three is everything that the people who support him believe in is poison. And you know, you've got to do that stair step down through all the layers of poison when you finally get to a place, Bruce, where you realize that the only way we save this country is by trying to save each other. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's like a couple of direct ways to approach the problem. One of those is to boost each other up and try to create a conversation where it's no longer, I guess the best way to put it is when they started, when this guy took power in 2001, one of the things that he did was he created an atmosphere of distrust among the media. So the media, you know, wouldn't report negatively on it because they were scared that they wouldn't get an interview or they wouldn't get invited to the special events, you know, or whatever.
It's an access issue.
Exactly. So, you know, they were scared about, they didn't want to, you know, say anything. And now it's become such that, you know, people like David Gregory and Helen Thomas are speaking up, but not loudly enough to provide enough voice to the rest of the U.S. population that hates this guy to actually find their voice and a point of unity with each other and feel like they're not all alone. I mean, you know, I live here in North Carolina. You live in West Virginia. There are thousands of people out here that think like we do, Bob, but they feel all alone because all they hear is Rush Limbaugh or Neil Bortz, and all they see on their television set is that guy, what's his name, Brian, what's his name, the guy on NBC, who is an avid Rush Limbaugh listener, Brian.
Oh, Brian Williams?
Brian Williams, yes.
Yeah.
With his right wing slant to the news, they think they're all alone.
Yeah, and these people, how many Academy Awards is Good Night and Good Luck up for?
That I couldn't tell.
Bunches. And that's a story of Edward R. Murrow and standing up against a bunch of right wing fascist freaks. And is there anybody who honestly believes that Brian Williams is an heir to the traditions of Edward R. Murrow? Brian Williams is a life support system for a hairdo.
he and what's that guy, Chris Matthews, the one they call Tweety?
Yeah, Tweety Matthews. I mean, there's maybe one legitimate newscaster, the guy behind the desk. There's maybe one of those people who are legitimate on all of television, Keith Olbermann.
Right.
And he's a reformed sportscaster. And he does more news than every one of them put together. Jack Cafferty at CNN is an old curmudgeon. Who's past his, he doesn't have the fabulous hair, so he can't anchor anything anymore. So he rolls his shirt sleeves up and plays Lou Grant to Wolf Blitzer's Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, that's good.
And they're about the only ones who are telling anything approaching the truth.
But you're absolutely right. And I think that part of the, following that line of reasoning, I think our job, Bob, and as a radio host, but not only that, but as citizens, is to create that conversation, man, wherever we can.
Yeah, right.
People, it amazes me. Like this guy, I never would have a million years thought he would be on our side, and yet he is. So it just goes to show you that maybe, generalizations that they've made about us don't necessarily work, and maybe some of the generalizations we've made about them may not work either.
Well, that's entirely possible, Bruce. And the other thing, what I was talking about is, as your call was coming in, this business of liberals picking and choosing the people that they're willing to talk with. I've created a sort of joking slogan for this program, that it's liberal talk with a Southern exposure. And I got tickled me to death. I got an email.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. I got my banjo and my jug. I got an email from a lovely lady in Paris. And I don't mean Paris, Kentucky, last night.
Or Paris, Tennessee.
Right. And, she said, that she really enjoyed the program, had just discovered it. And appreciated the point of view, the point of view that I brought in and just the way that we went about things. We have got to find ways to talk to the rest of the nation. We got to find ways to talk to the rest of the world.
Absolutely.
Because the rest of the world thinks you, me, and every last one of us have gone absolutely stark raving, crazy. When 2004 rolled around and we didn't have the common sense to throw this no good bum out. That we were almost beyond the pale. We were beyond saving. That there was nothing left. There was nothing left of America worth fighting for. And I refuse to believe that, Bruce. Don't you?
I refuse to believe that he was elected. But
we
don't want to go there too far because then they start with the moon bat stuff. And if you look at some of that stuff too, though, it amazes me that America has been for the most part self-correcting down through the years. If you go too far one direction, something happens, usually swings it back toward the middle a little bit. And it's been so what I'm thinking here is that, in this last election, that was supposed to happen, and it didn't. And what we're seeing right now is the unraveling of a presidency that's unraveling itself. I think the universe is self-correcting. So it's like saying, well, the people can't do it, so maybe, forces larger out there must, have to take over, but... amazes me.
Yeah, but some part of this problem, Bruce, is of our making.
Yeah.
When John Kerry just decided that he was John Kerry wouldn't, Richard Nixon could go to China, but John Kerry couldn't go to Alabama.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There was a decision made by those those well-paid losers. That's what they are. They're well-paid losers in the stratosphere of the Democratic political structure. Well, we don't need to go to Alabama because they really don't have the electoral votes and we don't have a rat's chance in hell.
Yeah.
And you're never going to have that chance until you roll your sleeves up and get down there and actually talk about what it means to be an American with people who are ostensibly as American as you and me. I've got liberal buddies in Alabama and in Georgia and in Mississippi. You've got liberal friends in North Carolina. They don't need to be ignored. They need to be emboldened, and they need to be. Oh, what's the word from the really fired up church service? They need to be sanctified.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
Well, I think we're starting.
I mean, we're trying. Yeah, we're trying. I'm trying. You're trying. But for the most part, you know, it still amazes me when I look back, Bruce, and I realize for 20 years that a bunch of snotty liberals said that they couldn't, you know, we don't want to do what that Limbaugh fellow is doing. That's beneath us.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I dare say that unless the Democratic Party puts forth a real honest effort in the South, we're not going to see anything change anytime soon.
I fear that you are right.
Unless you and I do it, and if that's the case, then you know.
You know, I'm going to get out there, and I'm going to go at it hammer and tongs. And frankly, I'm going to do this show the same way. If there's one listener, one dozen, or 1 million.
There you go. I'm with you. And you know what? And you better let me get into the show on Skype.
Sounds good, Bruce.
Man, have a wonderful weekend. We're going to be live tomorrow night with Fourth Estate Radio.
That's right.
We have some interesting labor stuff that's going on in Australia. That sounds very familiar with an American company coming down there and trying to bust up a union. And also on All Things Reconsidered Sunday night, it'll be a cornucopia of things. So do tune in.
Well, all right then. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'll be happy as a little clam right here behind the board.
There you go.
You know, I kind of enjoy the chance to be silent for a couple of nights.
There you go.
All right, you take care, Bruce.
Have a great night.
All right, we'll do. Later. Bye now. Let's see. Let's keep it rolling. Sue is with us, our good friend from the United Kingdom. Hey, Sue, you're head on.
Hi, Bob. I wasn't going to call in again tonight, but after listening to the gentleman from Dakota and then Ben, I felt that I really should call in, because the one thing that your show does is it gives people that feel powerless a chance to speak. And I'd like to encourage anybody that's listening, you know, overcome your fear, call in, because people need a voice. And Bob gives you the chance to talk, you know, and I think it's fantastic that so many different people can call in. So that's my little bit for tonight, Bob.
Well, thank you very much, Sue. I hope that people will take you up on your offer, on Bob's challenge, on Rick's challenge last night. I'm not saying I'm better or worse than anybody else, but I have an opportunity here. I'm not necessarily married to a format. People can talk. It's what I want. I hate 4-minute talk radio. I despise it, Sue, because you can't get anything done in 4 minutes.
Well, the thing is, all of these right-wing people, you know, they have these call-ins, and if anybody calls in with a different opinion, they're just battered down. And I think that people, you know, the good people in the world have been battered down so that they're frightened to talk out. And, that you know, they need somewhere where they can come and say, well, you know, I don't like what's going on, wherever they are. And because you can get battened down and feel that there's just no hope left in the world.
Right.
And, you know, you need a beacon. And you're my beacon at the moment, Bob. So there you go.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I will do everything in my power, and Agnes will do everything in hers to live up to that. Because,
well,
you know, we get as energized by you all as anything that you get from us.
I love that, you all.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Pittsburgh, they'd say yuns.
And there's
y'all. I don't know. Maybe it's old Anglo-Saxon or something.
But you know, it's great. It's got a lovely safe feel to it. Your program. You know, I really really love to listen, and I'm going to try and set my alarm so that I can be up for Fourth Estate and All Things reconsidered.
Yeah, reconsidered. I hope you will.
Reconsidered. Well, because that's the 3 o'clock in the morning call for me, but I'm going to try and
do it. Oh, man. Well, I hope you
can.
All right. You take care, Sue. So good to hear from you again, and a wonderful weekend to you.
And the same to you, even though I know that you can't wait till Monday.
We slog through.
Okay,
take
then.
Take care.
Love you all. Bye.
Love you, too. Bye-bye. I'm all tingly. I'm not being sarcastic. I am.
Good people.
I don't think I ever realized how momentous just giving people a chance to talk could be. And yeah, I sit here and I, you know, sort of stretch out a brand new aneurysm every now and then when something really gets under my skin. But like last night, I apologize for last night because when the phone system went down, I went absolutely unequivocally unprofessional. Because that phone system, if I was doing this as some sort of a podcast and there was no live interaction, I wouldn't do it. I would not do it. Because I don't think that highly, I'm not that in love with myself that I feel like I can, to read a news story and then say, I needed some new screws, so I went down to my True Value Hardware store, page 3. I can't stand that. I guess I'm kind of persnickety in my tastes. But from the earliest days of my educational upbringing, I have rather loathed being talked at. And the only thing that makes it possible to do this from night to night is the fact that I know that behind this thing, the microphone, that little cable going out to it is going out to thousands and thousands of potentially millions of human beings. And that we have a chance to talk with one another. I think it's worth reiterating. I worked at CNN for a couple of years. And part of my job there was interviewing people on the telephone and talking about news stories and then and recording the whole process and then saying, I heard that, dear. Interviewing people and then cutting it into, the rules were the soundbite can't be more than 15 seconds. It can't be more than 15 seconds. And, those things were incorporated into the newscasts. And that was, I think that was at an age of somewhat a little bit, at least a little bit of innocence in the American media. But by the time 10 years had passed, that 10-second soundbite had become the industry standard. No politician could say anything that took more than 10 seconds. No story could last more than a minute and 30. And whether actively or subliminally, people become inured to that. And it affects our own conversations among ourselves. I want to break that cycle. I want to break it. I want to stomp it. I want to throw it out the throw it out the window of a skyscraper and watch it go to a million pieces on the pavement below. We have got to have extended dialogue. We have got to have extended debate. We have got to have extended discussion. And, all those things that they taught you, never talk about politics or religion. If we aren't talking about those two things in America right now, then everything that our friend Bob in North Dakota said he was afraid would go on and happen will happen. This is the part where the wingnut lurkers get mad. There was no active move toward the German people weren't sitting around saying, "Gosh, I wish we were a totalitarian fascist regime." Silence bought them that. Timidity bought them that. Fear bought them that. And it wasn't even something they were shopping for. They just wanted a damn job. They wanted food on the table. But the price that they paid for it was hellish and heinous. And we are now at a point in this country where we're on the verge of paying that same damn price. And it is a price far too high to pay. What Andy said in the second half hour of the program, are you selling war bonds? No. Are you saving scrap metal for the war effort? No. Rolling bandages? No. Growing victory gardens? No. We're not doing any of the stuff that is required of a self-sufficient people. We put houses in McBurbs so close together that you couldn't raise one tomato plant, let alone enough to put up enough to get you through the winter. And people say, well, you know, at least I don't have to mow the lawn. Well, the lawn's growing on a landfill, doofus. And if you tried to grow something in it, God only knows what you'd get back. America's farmland is eaten up by McBurbs. We import more food than we grow for ourselves. This is a nation that is in the process of being poisoned. And the poisoning started about 20 years ago. And shame on those in the Democratic Party who said that they were above all of that kind of stuff, like getting on the radio and talking. Shame on them. When you are above talking with ordinary or extraordinary Americans who manage to work every damn day and raise children and volunteer in their communities. And you're above talking about the things that matter to them, and you sit around and you wonder on election night what went wrong. My God, you know, sure John Kerry won. I know John Kerry won on November 2004. You know John Kerry won in 2004. Here's my question. Why was it close? Why was it even close? Why was it even close? It was close because for 20 years the ground had been worked and the poison had been worked into the soil so that nothing that a Democrat planted could grow. And the Democrat stood by and said, you know what we need is another focus group. Focus group starts with the same letter. It's what you got. We got to take our break. And when we come back, lots of phone calls. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have you know, all of this injustice in society, and why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Hi, I'm Bruce Hornsby. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it certainly is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend his time, or her time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your kids to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that they really like, the one that really clicks for them. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by NENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Taking that time.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Oh, wow. Less than an hour left in the week. What are we going to do? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. You know the phone number. You know the email address, bob@headonradio.com. Our friend AJ of comearmageddon.blogspot.com writes, we aren't helping in the war effort like in World War II. Sure we are, Bob. We're putting yellow ribbon magnets on the back of our cars. Screw the victory garden. True patriots have a yellow magnet on the back of their car. Jeez. Yeah, I know. And it's not just a yellow ribbon magnet. Oh, no. It's a yellow ribbon magnet that was made in China that you bought at Walmart, and it was made with slave labor and sold to you by somebody who can't have health care, who makes maybe $6.10 an hour. And that's how you support the troops. You know, we'd be, with this kind of a war effort, we'd all be speaking German. At least on the East Coast, on the left, West Coast, maybe, you know, you'd be, well, you know, Domo already got him. It amazes me. It just amazes me. Stop it, Bob, and go to the phones. Mike is with us. Hey, Mike. You head on.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
Doing okay. You?
Alive, kicking, and frustrated, but...
Well, it's going to be that way sometimes.
But, yeah, I wanted to... knit together a couple of widely disparate threads and have you think about them for a minute.
Okay.
You remember, now the name just flew out of my head, Cabaret.
Yeah.
And you remember the setting and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Germany right prior to and at the changeover to fascism.
Right.
And Cabaret was a display of Berlin nightlife.
Right. Well, you know, and Weimar Germany was said to be highly decadent. Right.
Correct. And I mean, you know, it was avant-garde. It was out there. You know.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Right.
And that's one thing to keep in mind. And another is an interesting program they had a few years ago on. Either A&E or History Channel, I think it was on A&E, and it was called Art in the Third Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an examination of how after the Nazis took over, how art became formularized. And essentially the pictures were all very pastoral, they were all of a certain type, either that or they were very heroic fighters.
Exactly.
And so forth and so on. And the problem, what occurred to me was the fact that the majority of the German people liked this kind of art. This was the whole point. They disliked, you know, the average German in the street outside of Berlin was repulsed by the avant-garde and the transsexuals, the transvestites, and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
And they liked this kind of art.
Well, they liked, you know, they liked art that didn't challenge them.
Correct. They wanted what they felt comfortable with, and this is what they felt comfortable with. And the problem of it is, look around you right now. The people who are screaming about how terrible, you know, things like Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen yet. It doesn't really interest me, but as a concept. You know, the fact that people are out here, again, who haven't seen the movie and are protesting it because of what it represents.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I remember then, you know, one of the best examples of that is I was damned to hell by two separate so-called Christian groups, once as a teenager walking in to see Life of Brian, and again later on in my adult life walking in to see The Last Temptation of Christ.
I got a funny to tell you about that. I was in New Orleans at the time, and I was going to see Life of Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some hyper-Christian protesters out front who were trying to block my entry you know, because I was going to lose my soul if I went in there and saw this. This was terrible. How could I? And so forth. And
yeah,
so
come
on.
Out, you know, come out 15 grams lighter or something. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And as I was trying to get past these people, one of them swung a sign and hit me with it on purpose.
Ooh.
And you know what the sign said?
I can only imagine.
Jesus loves you. What are you kidding me with?
Jesus may love me, but he gave me a black eye.
And, you know, I kind of had to stiff-arm the guy, and he kind of fell down a flight of stairs, but oops.
Well,
you know.
These
sorry.
Things happen, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, this is how bent these people are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with the... I'm sick to death of hearing right-wingers talk about how nutty, and that was the phrase I think that O'Reilly used in the last couple of days, how nutty the Arabs are because they're all upset because of a cartoon of their prophet. I'm sick to death of that because I very well remember when Piss Christ
exactly
came out at a museum, or at the Brooklyn Museum of Art, I think it was, where they
right.
had a Madonna that was painted with elephant poo.
Right. And, you know, this was, you know, totally unacceptable. How dare you, you know.
Yeah, right. I mean, people got their lives threatened over it, you know, and we think the Muslims are the crazy ones.
Correct. And the thing is, like, right now, you know, people, what really gets me is the shrub is sitting here going, well, you know, we can't look like we're racist, trying to deny the Dubai company the right to our ports. You know, how dare you people behave like this? Well, you spent the last 5 years demonizing the Muslims.
Yeah, well,
what do you expect?
Precisely. That's exactly what I was getting at, Mike. I mean, for my purposes, it has nothing to do with them being Arabs or Muslims. It has everything to do with them being tyrants and dictators in their own country. It has a world to do with the fact that a woman cannot vote in that country. It has everything to do with this is our country. And, you know, I think in a way, Mike, this is a manifestation of my ultimate shame over my own country. We can't... you know, I mean, I stomp around in the woods, and I used to buy Rocky brand boots, okay? They were made over in Cambridge, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Gore-Tex lined and everything. And if so much as a drop of water ever seeped into those boots, you stick them back in the box, you mail them to Cambridge, Ohio, they mail you back a new pair, and it says made in the USA, and they no questions asked.
Right.
They ain't made in USA no more.
Correct.
We can't make a refrigerator, we can't make a stove, we can't make a shoe, we can't knit a sock, and now we can't even run a daggum port.
Well, the problem of it is...
My heart's broken, Mike.
I was upset by the fact that those self-same ports are being run by the British right now.
Right!
I mean...
Whose bright idea was that?
You know, I'm not against the Dubai company for any particular reason other than... We should be running our own ports.
I don't know why that's so hard to figure out.
You know, we're missing something here.
But now I find out, you know, our buddy John Fox down in Australia, he tells me that the port of Adelaide is run by Dubai Ports World. And the guy that's been tapped by the Bush administration to run the United States Maritime Administration, well, he's a former executive with Dubai Ports World, and he was in charge of their Latin America and European operations. For all I know, that means Copenhagen?
Mm-hmm.
Or Naples, or Rota, Spain, or the Mexican ports. You know, the Chinese, you know, and they had a... There was a frenzy that was had over the fact that a Chinese company is running the ports at either end of the Panama Canal.
Oh, yeah. Frank Gaffney was saying they're going to cut us off from our own canal. Well, it really isn't our canal.
No, we only leased it for 99 years.
Right. And we didn't want to give it up. At that, you know,
right.
Even at that.
But I mean, this is such a manifestation of America's. We've lost. It's like we're impotent, isn't
worse.
It? Really,
worse. I mean,
yeah, neutered.
Yeah, impotent is one thing. Neutered is more.
Yeah, neutered is almost neutered is irreversible.
Correct. And I'm afraid we've gotten to irreversible.
You know, I'm sitting here. We've got a big old Rand McNally map of the United States here in the studio, and I'm just sitting here looking at the American eastern coastline.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that somewhere out there, you know, in one of the corporate offices of Dubai Ports World, New York is spelled out in Arabic.
Yeah.
And underneath it is the Arabic word for hours.
Yeah.
And Newark, same thing, and Philly and Baltimore.
And New Orleans.
And New Orleans and Miami Houston. And Corpus Christi. Houston, is Houston part of the deal, too?
I'm not sure.
How do you, I mean, you know, those right-wing Texans, Mike, that are so doggone fond of George Bush, how do you think they feel about having Texas ports? I mean, you know, that's the Lone Star Republic, by golly. How do you think they feel about it, knowing that their boy just sold them out?
I wonder what Hank Hill would say.
Hank Hill would have an aneurysm.
Exactly.
I can't understand. And then, you know, what's next? Who's next? I mean, why did the West Coast get left out of this process? Is that because the deal's already on the table to give that to the Chinese?
Probably.
And I, you know, you tell me. I'm not trying to sound xenophobic about that. About this, I don't want to come across this way. But you know, there's been bloodshed. There's been bloodshed for the sanctity and the safety of those ports.
Yeah. Well, as somebody pointed out. First of all, have you checked out Bill Moyers' piece in Common Dreams?
I have not. I saw that earlier today. I have not had a chance to read it.
It's excellent. You really need to read it. You know, he makes a very good point about the Marianas.
Most people don't know about Tom DeLay and the Marianas.
And you know, and he made a very good point. He says, think about this. Think about how much American blood was spilled to take Marianas in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And is this what our countrymen fought and died for? Was sweatshops?
That's exactly it. Because, you know, under Bill Clinton, again, it's one of those things that a lot of people don't know about, Mike. Under Bill Clinton, an executive order that was signed that says, yes, you can put Made in USA on the garments that are made in the Marianas, but you damned well will it pay at least minimum wage.
Right.
George W. Bush comes in. That's where a lot of that money Jack Abramoff took and Tom DeLay took came from.
Mm-hmm.
It was the sweatshop owners buying out the opinion of the United States government that the Marianas Islands did not have to pay minimum freaking wage.
Right.
To slave laborers. You know, they're not even, the people that work in the sweatshops in the Marianas Islands, they're not even from the Marianas Islands. They're imports.
Yeah. Well, they're Chinese refugees.
Yeah. I mean, there are forced abortions, and right-wingers support that.
Yeah.
There is forced prostitution. Right-wingers support that.
Correct. Well, as long as their side's doing it, you know, it's kind of like the shrub said, you know, dictatorship's a good thing, as long as I'm the dictator.
As long as I'm the dictator. Oh, God, Mike. Okay, next question. Is there any coming back from this?
I'm starting to wonder. I mean, let's be brutally honest about it. We got started down this road even before Clinton, although he was deeply involved in blazing a path that the shrub has taken and improved, if you will.
Really, yeah. Twisted version of improved, but I understand your meaning.
Well, as in, you know, Clinton blazed the trail and this guy widened and paved it.
Well, and see, that's the difference, and I'm not going to sit here and be a Clinton apologist, but that's the difference between the way Bill Clinton looked at free trade and the way that George Bush looks at free trade. Bill Clinton looked at free trade as a means of uplifting other nations to our standard. Dear Leader looks at free trade, and Republicans look at a free trade as a means of driving American labor down to the level of the other nations.
Well, the problem of it is, let's be brutally honest about it, Clinton wasn't that wild about improving anyone's standard of living either, because quite honestly, it would be impossible for the rest of the world.
Well, yeah, I think
live in the American mode.
I think he had rather of a Pollyanna-ish vision of free trade.
True.
You know, the free trade is on paper. You know, over a couple of glasses of beer in the bar, free trade sounds really great. because, you know, it's free trade, it's fair, and we're going to tear down protectionist barriers. But the thing is, the minute you get past all the happy hogwash and you start thinking about the fact that there's no way you can have free trade with a nation whose average hourly wage is 29 cents, how many decades is it going to take to raise 29 cents up to United States wage levels?
Of course, and if, especially if you make policies that enable and encourage business to outsource
right.
to these locations, you're A, killing your own middle class, you know, the goose that lays the golden egg, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and B, you're prolonging that nation's founding around a minimum wage or subminimum wage.
Yeah. I mean, that's where you wind up with the building collapses in Southeast Asian nations. You know, literally the knitting factories for Walmart, where, you know, mothers wander around outside the building, hoping that their 12-year-old little girl comes out alive.
Exactly. You know.
So.
You know, this is the world that we have created.
And the burning question is it a world we can fix?
I'm having my doubts.
Well, it
we may have slipped so far down the slippery slope that it's going to be awfully rough, if not impossible, at this point.
Well, it's going to take some leadership first and foremost, Mike.
Well,
and what Bob said is true. We are profoundly lacking in that. On both sides of the aisle.
Right. And it's not just that. I mean, it's everything taken together. I mean, if you've been following the global warming thing, they're starting to realize it's no longer a question of global warming. The question is, have we gone well past the tipping point already?
Mm-hmm.
That there is no fix to it now anymore. Somebody is turning the heat up, and we can't get to the handle anymore to turn it back down.
Yeah, the handle's been torn off.
Exactly.
You know, the Titanic is already onto the iceberg, and
right. You know, all these things.
Mike, that's the kind of stuff that sends a cold chill up my spine because you know all I got to do is walk 10 feet, and I'm looking at three little people that are doomed.
Yeah.
How do I say that to him? How do I look at myself? You know, how do Agnes and I, you know, go into the next day?
I don't know. I mean, in a way, I had a unfortunate accident when I was a teenager. I had a I got up close and personal to a nuclear reactor.
Oof.
And essentially got sterilized. So that's one thing I have never had to deal with and never will. And looking back at it now, I'm kind of going, well, you know, may not have been such a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's spooky stuff for us.
Yeah.
And it should be for any parent. And yet, this dialogue that we're not having in this country yet, Mike, there are people who are just happily wandering along in their little lives, and you know they've got their little highlighter out, and they've got their TV guide there, and oh look, Desperate Housewives.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
You know, and what's the old line? The condemned ate heartily.
The thing is, most people simply refuse to look down the road any further than the end of their nose, because any further than that, out there be monsters.
Yeah. Well, I always remember the words of Hunter S. Thompson. Big darkness, soon come.
Yep.
Mike, thanks so much. You have yourself a great weekend. I look forward
too.
To hearing from you again.
Okay.
Take care. And rolling right on, Peter. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
This time we get to talk.
Okay. That's a great deal. I'm all for that. That last caller, Mike, he an interesting fellow. I hope he'll continue to call. Interesting fellow. And Andy over in England, too. I'm beginning to enjoy that guy more and more. He's got a lot to say.
Yeah, we may have to give Andy a show.
Well, you know, it's not a bad idea. You know, and he has such great perspectives about rolling bandages and things like that, things that would have never occurred to me. Great.
Yeah.
Great. You know, before you went into the last break, you were talking about Gore, the 2004 election that was obviously stolen. I was going to point out, I'm sure you know this, that, you know, the same thing happened in 2000. You remember it was late in the evening, and all the polls said that Bush was losing by a landslide, and they went in there to try to break it to him, and his response was, giggle, giggle, don't worry about it.
I remember that. I saw the video.
Very clearly. And then the next thing you know, all the polls are wrong, and then the media went on to defend that. Disgusting.
Yeah.
Absolutely disgusting. But the real reason I called this evening is, there's been two news articles that have really disturbed me this week. A lot of that stuff I can let roll off my back like water, but I mentioned one the other night about where Bush said that the American public shouldn't worry about the port's sale because, as he used the word, my government has...
Yeah.
And which is just so fundamentally flawed, it was very, very disturbing. And then on the heels of that, today, across my computer screen, we have another Antichrist among us. You know, we talked about it the other night. The symptoms of the Antichrist, plural, are those who refuse to look after the less fortunate. But this guy is in Texas. His name is Joe Barton. He's a Republican.
Okay.
And he's second, according to this article, only to Tom DeLay in the amount of money he's receiving from the oil industry. But guess what? He is furious at Citgo. He is absolutely incensed with Citgo that they're offering the heating oil program to the poor people up in the Northeast. The rates are, maybe 60% below market value. And this guy is absolutely having a fit about it. He wants Citgo to produce by tomorrow all of the records and the minutes and the logs and the emails and even desk calendars that are related to Citgo's program. And
God.
Yeah, and furthermore,
because he ain't getting enough money out of it.
Exactly. He wants to know the hows and whys and particulars of the beneficiaries of the program. In other words, how they were selected. And he wants to know, he's asking if this program runs afoul of any of the U.S. laws, and including the antitrust laws. And this comes at a time.
Now, wait, Peter. I'm sorry to cut you off. You do realize he's doing this on orders, right?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I guess greed couldn't be the only reason to do
that. This is coming straight down from the White House because, remember, the White House is trying to inoculate, kind of Sleazy Rice said that. They're trying to inoculate Venezuela.
Well, no, that's true. That's true.
And if they could...
Venezuela's not on their list.
Because they know that the poor people who can barely afford heating oil aren't, they're too... Election day is going to come and go. And they're not even going to pay any attention to it. But if they can stop that cheap heating oil from getting to the poor, then they can take away Hugo Chavez's little public relations gain.
Well, yeah, it's got to be something like that, Bob, because they have no shame. So it couldn't be embarrassment that it's a foreign country offering this. They could not possibly be embarrassed.
No, because if that was the case, they'd be embarrassed about the $25 million more that Kuwait just pledged to help clean up after Katrina.
Yeah, that too. We're suddenly receiving foreign aid, and there's just no shame. And the media doesn't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
Peter, are you familiar with the movie Marathon Man?
Well, yes, I saw.
You remember
toward the
end of it when Dustin Hoffman finally has Laurence Olivier down in the New York sewer.
Oh yeah.
And he's got the diamonds in his hands, and he just looks at Olivier, the old war criminal, the old Nazi death camp dentist, and he says, "Eat them, chew them up, eat them."
Yeah.
Joe Barton.
I don't
want the FBI on my doorstep or anything, but I think it's a beautiful image in my tiny little mind to think of somebody like Joe Barton sitting at a table and having having somebody across from him and just a case of 10W-40.
How perfect is that? Eat it.
Just unscrew the lid. Drink it.
It's so richly deserved.
Drink it, and when you're done with that one, drink another one.
That was so richly deserved. Bob, I didn't have much more to say tonight.
That's okay.
I'm on Friday, and I was already ticked about the my government. Now this Sure.
Well, you know, I thought you were going to mention Peter Dear Leader's speech at the Capitol Hilton Hotel today.
Well,
I mean, this thing is 8 pages long, this speech.
Well, somehow that didn't come across my desk. I have to admit I missed a few things.
This was a speech to the American Legion. Let's see. We have made health care a top priority for my administration. There's one that should have hung in his throat.
Yeah.
One of the clear lessons of the September the 11th is that the United States of America must confront threats before they fully materialize. Wouldn't that be not selling the ports before we've sold the ports, something like that?
It would seem to make sense in logic world.
It just makes me want to scream. Honest to God, it does.
Me too, Bob.
Peter, have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too. And I'll talk at you later.
All right. Bye. And let's see. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, more of your phone calls. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
All of the wildest. It's got the best of you. I got fire in my heart, fire in my belly too.
Speaking of thievery,
yes,
just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right,
yes,
he died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so...
Oh my God, I thought it was so ghoulish.
It
just freaks me out. Anyway...
Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Everyone loves to listen to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish. These days it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
Heard the Wingle Whip song in a long, long time. Oh, we're dancing in the head-on studio. All right, enough. Let's take it on home toward the close of tonight's program. Rick, our good friend in Panama City, is calling. Hey, Rick, you're head-on.
Hey, Bob, what another great show. Fantastic show.
Thank you.
I mean, it's just so great here. I mean, I just love everybody's calling. And that fella there, Jesus, what's his name? The older fella, a little older than me, I think, just a bit.
You talking about our buddy Bob?
Yeah, the other Bob. That's
yeah.
Right. Oh, Bob, for Pete's sakes, don't stop calling. I mean, you were one of the pioneers that got all the guys like me and everyone else to call. You carried the weight for a long time. Please don't stop now. We need you.
Exactly.
But I just wanted to call in and say hi and just mentioned. About that speech today. I mean, did you finally get a chance to find that speech anywhere?
Yeah, I did.
Is that awful? That should terrify anybody that actually paid attention to what this cookie was saying. Because he just basically set himself up as the new Grand Caesar or Napoleon, if you want.
Yeah. I mean, okay, let's go ahead. Let's get it out of the way, Rick. Führer.
Yeah. He is going to designate who does what in this world and when. But what I find amazing is if you contrast that with the replay of the hearings regarding Google and all these services that willfully and happily, for the sake of a dollar, helped the murder and torture of people in China, you can't help but notice that he's only targeting countries that have two things in common, and that is A, oil,
yeah,
and B, No weapons. They're helpless to defend themselves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he's not going to pick on somebody that can fight back. You know, the stuff in the speech, Rick, about, our successes the success of our war plan in Iraq, blah, 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 contrasts so starkly. I don't know if you've seen this yet or not, but... over there at the F-Word Network, as Jack Cafferty calls it.
Yes.
Your World with Neil Cavuto.
I can get up there.
Don't. I mean, you'll have to go take a shower, and it's late and everything. But this was yesterday on Neil Cavuto's show. It was guest hosted by a guy named David Asman. But you know how they put the stuff on the crawler and then there'll be a slogan underneath a photo that they've got supered behind the guy, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Well, this guy's ranting along and the super comes up showing the blown up shrine in Samarra, the Golden Mosque or whatever it was. And the super on it says, "Upside to Civil War?"
I know, it's just that they're shameless. And I have my own feelings about who blew that one up.
Well, yeah, me too.
You know, I mean, it seems like all things just have... This guy is turning around and making a speech when all of a sudden, in Saudi Arabia, at the same time...
Yeah, the refinery.
Yeah, at the same time, just to prove the point. Of course, nobody was harmed, and none of the pipes were hurt, and production never failed, and... what do they do? Blow up a chicken coop outside the grounds?
No, it was two car bombs.
Yeah, but they didn't get anywhere near the refinery. So you know darn well that was Saudi Arabia,
but
once again helping on the war on terror to further terrorize America.
Oh sure, and bear in mind also that when it went down, oil prices on the world market went.
Oh yeah,
straight up
at the very mention.
Yeah,
the justification is something bad could happen, therefore that's why we're gouging you. You know, it's justified because you never know. Like, I had a dream last night, and I saw oil price at $5 a gallon, justified. But I mean, it's just amazing the amount of collusion that, and the people that, there's always the same cast of characters, the same felons, always involved doing the same thing and supporting what's going on. I mean, the what's going on with this guy making speeches with the tone that he had?
Yeah, and
turned around and gave it.
His tone is pushy, Rick.
It justifies North Korea's everything they've said.
Yeah.
They have
and everything Hugo Chavez has said.
That's right. But North Korea does have at least one or two nukes. And probably got four or five by what I hear from other people.
You're right.
But gee whiz, I mean, he's been saying right along, the only reason we're still, our country is still intact is because we have weapons to deter the Americans. Well, Bush is proving that daily by going after countries at one-stoplight countries with no guns.
Well, precisely. I mean, the Clinton administration actively looked at just bombing the snot out of North Korea, but they realized it would cost, umpty million lives in South Korea, so they decided, yeah, maybe not so much.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but George Bush,
artillery ready to go into the South.
Yeah, Rick, he's a coward. Are we surprised that a coward acts in a cowardly fashion?
But the support that he has, and then he starts talking the same way as the Chinese talk. Now, I picked up a little interesting thing that coincide with this during the replay of those hearings about the Yahoo and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And a little French gal got up, and she was talking about how China views human rights and how they have this totally different attitude towards it. And their view of human rights is making sure that people are safe, protected, and fed. Now, Bush has been, what's he been saying for a couple of months or so now? Protect the people, keeping them safe.
Right.
Right?
Well, any little dictator can do that.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't mention fed, or keeping people fed, because he's a Republican and they don't feed anybody.
Yeah,
but he'll keep you
those
safe.
Those ugly little doses of reality you've got, Rick. I love
it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the guy, but this is what he's talking about. He's mimicking, if you listen to his language, He's really coming from the standpoint of a dictator in his mentality.
Yes, he is. There's no getting around it. There aren't a lot of wing nuts that have the nerve to call this program, but I don't know. I don't know how any of them could presume to win that debate. You know, is George W. Bush acting like a dictator?
Oh, I can't even imagine how they stand for it. Like today, just not too long ago, that stupid Libby marching down the street with an entourage of evil trial lawyers.
Yeah, the ones they hate so much.
Yeah, with a big smile on his face, and they're he's done everything. He's played beat the clock, and now he's putting the system on trial and everything else, like some other person might do that's a regular American, where it's evil if we do it. But here's this guy, one of your supreme leaders, one of those holier-than-thou, just like you Republicans. He's your guy. How do you like that? They took away your right to an attorney, or just about have. They've imprisoned you in a box for bankruptcy reform. How do you like it? Huh? I just love it. I'm laughing in your face, Republicans. Lick it up now.
Yeah, exactly.
Just can't help it.
No, but, I mean, we've got a giggle or two coming. We really do. We get to laugh at them some.
I mean, I hate the fact that you and yours and me and mine and everybody on our side is dragged down and imprisoned by the same box. But at least if they ever do lock us up in camps, it won't be long before one of those nitwits like on these Freeper sites or your board will be sitting next to me, and I can go, hey, how's this working out for you, chummy?
and the question is, Rick, where are you going to get to ask that question? Over at consortiumnews.com, there's an article that's been out for a couple of days now by Nat Perry. And
I haven't seen it.
Bush's Mysterious New Programs.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did see it. As a matter of fact, I emailed it to you.
It blows my mind. Because, we all know about the detention centers, but it's that new programs part of the language that should really make you sit up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night.
It's a dirty little secret, and if you watch C-SPAN, I've been watching C-SPAN for 20 years or better, And if you listen to this really overworked language that has started up really in the last probably 10 or 12 years, and that is at the end, when you're, particularly the Congress, every time they get done setting a House rule, they always add "and for other purposes."
Yeah.
And that creates, you know, that's all that junk that, you know, and then they dispense in the reading, of course. I mean, I think it should be a rule in Congress and in the Senate that if you submit a bill or an amendment, read it.
Whole darn thing.
I'll wait.
Yeah.
I'll wait. Go ahead.
We got the time. We're paying you.
Yeah, but that for other purposes means just about, and it's like a blank check. When that's added for other purposes, anything can be inserted into it.
Well, that's like this stuff from Mr. Tice, and this is contained in the article. Drawing a distinction between collecting information and receiving information on U.S. citizens, the memo argued that military intelligence may receive information from anyone, anytime. That means that if NSA gives the information on American citizens to the Army is military intelligence can have it. They just can't collect it. They can receive it, but they can't collect it. You know, this is more of that unitary president crap.
That's right.
This is the stuff that gets under my skin about all these mugwump Dino Democrats who voted for Samuel Alito. Maybe I sound like a broken record on this stuff, Rick. I don't mean to, but a lot of this is going to come back to Sammy Alito.
And Robert. People
can, Roberts did. Yeah,
go check out Under the Robe. You ever been to that site?
Yeah.
Yeah. You read all about this guy. This guy went shopping for children, happened to find himself a couple of blonde-eyed, blue-eyed beauties, and then went around telling everybody, oh, they came from South America, and he got them in Scotland. For Pete's sake. What, would you need another red flag? And you don't think that, I mean, that guy...
Well, they were from Glasgow, Brazil.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I mean, and he's just as dangerous as Alito is, as Scalia is.
Right, but all, you know, whether it's Byrd having a hissy about the ports or Byrd having a hissy about domestic spying, have your hissy, Senator. Have kittens with crocheted tails for all I care, because, brother, you put the sucker on the bench that's going to tell you to eat it and like it.
That's right. That's right. Everything they did was they planned on the contingency of the Supreme Court in the end, which will be a rubber stamp for everything they did. Every single thing could, in another era, with most of this stuff, because I believe that if it ever happens that Bush gets impeached and thrown out along with the rest of this crew, is that we could use a courtroom strategy which is very honorable and very righteous, and it's called the poison fruit from the poison tree.
Yes, the fruit of the poison tree.
I believe that if Congress were to pursue that, if we can get the Congress and we impeach this guy, we can overturn a lot of this stuff because it's all poison. If you can prove that all this was done after the fact of the crime, then all of it can be made null and void.
Well, Congress can overturn almost anything that the Supreme Court does.
Right, exactly. And not only that, it can be overturned themselves. They can overturn themselves because it was in the commission after the fact of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see why we can't strategy can't be. Now, I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
And I suppose that fellows that know a lot more about the Constitution, like yourself, and then people that know the law could probably find the reasons why it can't be done. But if you chase that defense, if you put that forward and make it as public can be with world scrutiny, you're going to have a hard time not overturning that filth. Then you got the court of public opinion that forces the issue regardless of the statute.
Right, right.
You know. But I just.
But you know, that's all part and parcel of an informed citizenry, because you know I have this optimism about taking the Congress back, Rick. I'd like to think it can happen. You know, it's the whole thing that I do when I sit and watch Peter Pan with my kids, and we all go, "We believe, Tinkerbell, we believe." It's the same mindset. But I know for a fact, and I'm not trying to, you know, the rain on anybody's parade. I know for a fact that there are Congress people out there who are Democrats who are laboring along as minority members of this committee or that committee who are just going to be happy to get the chairmanship back and whatever the extra 10 or 15 large a year that comes with it and sit back, you know, fire up the big old Horkin cigar and say, well, honey, I'm home.
Well, that's fine. You know, I look at it like this. I mean, I hope we don't go back to the nonsense of the era of the Congress and Senate prior to the so-called Republican Revolution, where the Democrats had lost their mind, and the only good male was a gay male, and the only good person was let me see if I can get this right now, part Hispanic, part black, part lesbian. Well, they had this whole characteristic. I remember they were putting signs up, billboards of the perfect person, you know, and there was this conglomerate.
Well, I'd like to see the Democratic Party get back to the business of being the Democratic Party.
Wouldn't
you know, I don't. I'm not anti-feminist. I'm not anti-anybody except possibly Republicans.
That way, I'm not. I might be slightly chauvinistic, but what I'm trying to say is that they got to get back to the things that matter: equality for all, equal protection for all, workers' protection and rights. Now, these are the things that the Democratic Party was founded on, and they strayed off into this weird, creepy, it's like the, who was that crazy artist with the eyes and that weird coloring?
Oh, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
That third-dimensional weird art, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm talking, you know, the abortion thing, this business that they pulled in South Dakota is absolutely repugnant, it's repulsive, it's hateful, and it's a great big con, okay? Because we have to understand first and foremost that, you know, and Narol's all upset, and Now's all upset, and I understand why they're upset, but they got to take a step back and realize what's going on. The Republican Party is never, ever, ever going to move to criminalize abortion because they're going to lose a multi-billion-dollar donor base the minute that they do it.
Well, sure, and what's Bill Frist going to do? His family has made millions off of doing abortions.
Right.
You know, when he's not killing cats.
Exactly. It's you know, so I just wish that we could understand that, you know, when we're in response mode, as long as we're in response mode, we lose.
And if they leave it states' rights, in which is what is in their best interest to do, then all of their mistresses can run down and get one.
Exactly.
They can go to the state, because there'll be states like Nevada or something that'll be saying, you're abortion capital of the world.
Right.
You know, come to beautiful Reno. I mean, and get your abortion and play the slot. Try again. You got unlucky once, you might get lucky again. Who knows? You know, you never know. But you're right. They're never going to do it. This is just part and parcel of the same crap that gets people out to vote. Like, the queers are going to get married, as Mike says. You know, so run out to the voting booth and vote. If you watch people, how they vote, we had the most amazing thing. We're running short, so I'll say it really quick.
Okay.
We had the most amazingly funny thing happen here in Florida a couple of runs ago. And that was that we had the referendum. The question on the ballot was, do you want to have smaller classrooms and vote yes or no? I can't remember exactly how they phrased the question. And then there was another one where it was cutting the school budget. Well, Floridians are notorious. We're always voting yes on every question on the ballot. So we ended up with, yes, we want smaller classrooms, but no, we won't pay for it. But he was mandated by law to make the classroom smaller. And he went out of his way trying to go over the heads of the people. And when the idiots that voted for it found out, they actually wanted to rehold the election, some of them. But that's why I love referendums and putting a question on the ballot. If you phrase it just right, you might get lucky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, Rick, thanks so much, man.
Oh, always glad to call in. And hello to everybody. What do you say, Pete? Great job again. We'll see you guys now.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And Bob wanted to get in one last shout-out. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
How are you?
I just want to give a shout-out to, Sue across the pond?
That's right, Sue. Our good friend Sue in the UK.
Nah, she's my sweet love. Yeah?
All righty then.
No, Sue, this is to you, okay? It's for her. And, hey, Rick, you got my number. You can get it from Bob. I gave you my full address and phone number, right?
I do believe so, yes.
Yeah. And I'd like to, you know, kind of do a little off-the-air stuff with Rick.
A little networking. Yeah. Well, that sounds great, Bob. I'll tell you what, we're out of time. We got to go. All right.
You can call, or if she'd like me to call her, I'd call her.
Okay.
Okay?
You take care, Bob.
Love you guys much. Keep up the fight, and know you got the right tact, but not quite the right course.
Okay. Well, we'll work on it, Bob.
Keep working.
That's all we can do.
Figure it out yet.
Well,
hey. You might figure it out yet, or maybe they'll run you over. But, hey, only if you let them.
Right. And at least I ain't led no humdrum life. Take it easy, Bob.
You're having fun. And, hey, tell Agnes I love her.
Will do. She's right here. She hears every word you say.
Oh, of course she does.
All right. You take care, Bob, and have a great weekend.
Glenda. Glenda hears every word I say, too.
That's right. All right.
Okay. Good night, folks. And, hey, keep up the fight, but don't give up.
Never give up, never surrender. We're right there. All right, take care.
Good night. Bye.
Later. What a fun show, guys. Thanks so much to everyone who called, to everyone who listened, emails, the works. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by Randy Kerbway, and the stream is maintained, of course, by our dear friend, Ben Birch, at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He also archives this program and prepares it for podcasting, among other things. He has a fundraiser going on. Do the right thing, because Ben will never send you a bill. The show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. In more ways than one. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.